or blank. Then, all at once, he jammed to consciousness in a great searing molten shriek of pain. The transition was shattering. His body was a white blaze of agony, but he was in the dark. His eyes wouldn't open, or they might be wide open, and he just didn't know it. Oh, God, I'm blind, I'm blind, I'm... A scream boiled from his throat, and then he was straining, trying to move, and couldn't. Easy, someone said. Take it easy, I'm right here. He couldn't tell if the voice belonged to a man or a woman. I, he wheezed. He tried turning his head, but another red arrow of pain pierced him to the core, and he let go of another scream. Stop. This time a hand touched his shoulder. Try not to panic. If he wasn't hurting so much, he might have laughed. My God, what is wrong with me? He could smell himself, sour flesh, old blood, and fear. Can't see, can't move.
That's because of the restraints, boyo. This voice definitely belonged to a man.
Peter heard the hard boom of command, but also a rough weariness he associated with the old.
You're a fighter. I'll give you that.
Restraints. His heart crowded into his mouth. Kincaid? Where?
Easy. The first voice again, a soothing contralto, a woman. You've been out so long that we put bandages over your eyes to keep the corneas from ulcerating. Take it easy.
Her fingers spidered over his cheeks, and then she tugged. His skin bunched as the gluey adhesive let go. Air sighed over his closed lids.
Try now.
The simple act of opening his eyes took tremendous concentration. His muscles were creaky, like long unused gears, mucky with coagulated oil and grime. A sliver of light appeared, and then his lids were rolling back. Another lurch of panic clawed his chest. Blur! He wanted to cry. His tongue was thick, a flap of muscle that refused to cooperate.
Blurry! Blurry!
Beads of water dripped onto his forehead.
Close your eyes again. That's good. Just give it a couple minutes, okay? I had to use animal tranks. I'm sorry about that, but it's the best we have. Good thing you're strong as a horse and your heart's young. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
The cloth felt so good and cool and wet. He stopped fighting and let her work. There was a gurgle and splash, and then she was swabbing his forehead, his face, the underside of his neck. Her fingers worked at buttons, and then she was sponging his chest. He moaned, this time with relief.
Yeah, I'll bet that feels good.
The cloth went away again, and then she was tugging a shirt over his chest and drawing up a rough blanket that smelled of old wool and death.
Try opening your eyes now.
He did. His vision was still foggy, but he could make out green canvas above his head, a tent. His gaze roved over a metal pole at his left shoulder and a bottle of clear liquid that dripped fluid into the big vein at the crook of his elbow through a plastic tube. Leather restraints with big metal buckles were clamped around his wrists. From the pressure around his ankles, he knew his feet were tied down too. Some kind of infirmary. The air smelled chilly and damp. He lay beneath several blankets on a metal stretcher that felt flimsy and too light, like one of those pop-up gurneys EMTs used.
Military? Better?
Above and to the left, the woman's face took on angles and substance. She wasn't heavy, but solid and blunt. Her hair was scraped back into a knot at the nape of her neck. Her murky eyes were set in weathered skin. She was much older than he expected, maybe mid-70s or early 80s. Her fatigues were dated, like they were from a surplus store. But the flash on her left shoulder looked new, a colonial flag with a Roman numeral 3 dead center in that circlet of 13 stars. Oh, shit. Before the world went bust, he'd been a sheriff's deputy, so he knew exactly what that flash meant.
"Who are you people?" he whispered.
The booming voice came again from his right.
"Relax, boyo. You're among friends. Have to admit, though, you gave us quite a scare.
The man was blocky and solid, and his head was huge, like a chunk of granite furred with a thick shock of white hair, cropped flat and square as a broom. His chest was so barrel-shaped and big around that his arms seemed an afterthought, stubby and thick and tacked on. He wasn't tall, but massive and compact, tough as an ox. His uniform was different, too. Jet black from head to toe, but with that same shoulder flash and a single yellow star pinned to either lapel of the old man's fleece-lined black leather bomber jacket. A bulky walkie-talkie of the same vintage as the military surplus unit's rule used was clipped to his left hip. A holster rode on his right, a faint glimmer of pearl shining from the revolver's grip.
"You were gone 8 days, boyo. Glad you saw fit to rejoin us."
The blocky man's lips pulled into a grin.
"We had a bet going on about whether you'd make it. Happy to say that I was on the winning side. Name's Finn. This fine woman is Dr. Mather. And you are?"
8 days. He'd been here more than a week? If Rule was looking for him, they'd have given up by now. Chris wouldn't want to, he knew that, but even Chris wouldn't be able to justify a search forever.
"Where am I?"
he asked.
"You're safe, and you're alive."
"But where? What about my men?" His voice was rusty as an old hinge.
"There was a boy."
"Hold on," Finn said. Turning aside, he poured water from a plastic jug, then slid in a straw.
"You're probably dry as a desert."
The straw was tantalizingly close. The water's scent made him dizzy. Still, he hesitated. He sensed he would be crossing some line if he took water from this man.
"Go on, take it, boyo. I don't bite. Not like those Chuckies."
Finn tilted his head at the far side of the tent. Peter's eyes swept right, and he saw what he hadn't spotted before. More gurneys with bodies, 2 boys, 1 girl. All were restrained and completely out, probably drugged from fluid dripped into their veins through plastic tubes. Finn said,
"Soon as we decide to let those little darlings wake up, we'll put them in our holding area with the other 6. 10's all we can safely handle and feed. Nasty little buggers. You're the first normal your age the hunters have brought in. Be interesting to see what happens over time."
What did that mean? And hunters? Bounty hunters? Oh, God. Capturing him and Tyler had been the objective all along. He remembered the snow coming alive with icy geysers. They could have killed him, but hadn't.
"They tried pinning me down, but then I ran to Tyler, and that's when I got hit. They shot me as a last resort because they didn't want me getting away."
He stared up at Finn.
"Where's the boy?" "I'm afraid he's gone. But rest assured, we put Tyler to very good use."
"What? I don't..."
"Come on, no more questions. Drink up, boyo. You've lost a lot of blood. You're O negative. Did you know that? Pretty rare. And while that's good if I need blood, Mather could only transfuse you with the same blood type. Lucky for you, Peter, we're not talking something contagious."
What did that mean? And Finn already knew his name, and Tyler's. Of course he must. The bounty hunters knew who they were and where they'd been heading.
They were tipped off. But how? I didn't decide on Dead Man until that morning.
That was when he'd sent Lang ahead. Had Finn's bounty hunters ambushed his runner, that had to be it.
"Where am I?"
he rasped.
"Why, you're in my territory, Peter, and I've got the water you want and need. Come on now."
Finn proffered the cup again.
"No more questions."
Despite his fear, he desperately wanted a drink. He let Finn slide the straw between his lips. The water, cold and blessedly wet, flooded over his tongue. He thought he was going to faint. He sucked the cup dry in 3 gasping gulps.
"Excellent. Keep that down, and you can have more in a little while."
Finn looked over at Mather.
Bring in Davy, will you? He and Peter should get acquainted.
Yes, sir. Mather fired off a salute, then brushed past the changed on their gurneys. Watching her go, Peter realized something else.
You...
His gaze snagged on an old caged shop light. The light wasn't soft or pleasant, but very hard, a spray of bright yellow that hurt and burned shadowy afterimages on Peter's retinas, but he couldn't make himself look away.
You've got light.
Some, Finn said. We have enough juice to warm a few tents, the infirmary here and where Mather does her surgery and other work. Our depot is fairly well stocked. Vehicles are virtually useless, though we have a few older trucks, but we use what we have very sparingly.
Generators and a depot. He was sure now. It all tallied right down to that shoulder flash. The Roman numeral 3 stood for the 3%. That was the statistic private militias liked to throw around, because only that small percentage of the American colonists actually fought the British in the Revolutionary War. So this wasn't just a camp of survivors. This was a private militia compound that probably existed well before the world died.
You know, as unfortunate as it was that you got shot, that did give us a chance to disprove another theory, Finn said.
Despite the water, his mouth was puckery and parched again.
What do you mean?
Well, you lost all that blood. Strong or not, young or not, you'd have died if Mather hadn't found a donor.
What had the old man said? Lucky for you, it's not contagious?
Oh, God. You...
The words wanted to wedge in his throat and stay there.
You gave me blood from...
Yes, I did. And here you woke up still you.
Finn drew his hand over his brow.
Whew. Talk about a nail-biter.
The words tripped over his teeth.
How much?
Every last drop bled that little Chucky dry. Even that animal knew he was going. You could see it in his eyes. I got right up in his face. Little prick tried taking off my nose, but old habits die hard. I cut off his eyelids so I could watch the whole thing. It was very gratifying.
He was as close to screaming as he'd ever been in his life.
You're militia, right? But who are you people? What the hell do you want?
Finn's expression darkened.
We're what's left, and you will show the proper respect, or so help me God, I will carve you into kibbles and feed you to the Chuckies a piece at a time. I'll save the eyes for last. Eyes they really like. Something about that little pop.
The tent's flaps parted. Through the gap, Peter saw the slant of snow. Mather ducked in, followed a moment later by a man.
Oh my God.
Where would you like it, sir?
Lang, his man, his runner, snapped a crisp salute. Lang's snow-salted uniform was identical to Mather's, and he carried an automatic rifle. He spared Peter not a single glance.
Right here.
Finn patted an empty gurney, then slipped Peter a wink.
Don't take it too hard now, boyo. Lang served under my command in Nam.
Finn said it as if the country were a sweet potato.
Imagine how pleased I was when he reported how much you respected his combat skills.
Lang was Finn's man. A sweep of dread blackened his brain as he remembered something else. Lang and Weller had served in Vietnam together.
But that doesn't prove anything. Weller tried to save my life.
But wait... Something Weller said suddenly marched before his inner eye like that electronic ticker tape at Times Square.
You remember when your time comes, it was me did this.
Oh, Jesus.
A deep and darkling sickness crept through his veins like a contagion born on a plague wind. Weller hadn't saved his life. Weller was under orders to keep him alive. But why?
Busy putting two and two together?
Finn lifted an eyebrow.
They said you were a smart boy.
They. So, only Lang and Weller, or were there more? How many men had Peter thought loyal, but who were really working against rule? And it's personal for Weller. This is a grudge, something to do with me. But what? What do you want? He rasped.
God moves in mysterious ways, Peter, his wonders to perform. He rides upon the storm and deep in unfathomable minds.
Finn's eyes sparkled.
Why, I believe you know all about minds, don't you?
Minds. All the breath left his lungs, and the words struck him dumb. How did Finn know that? No one outside the council did, not even Chris, especially not Chris.
Finn turned as Lang held back the flap, and two more people bullied in on a frigid cloud of fresh snow. Finn's man, bald and buck-toothed, had his hands firmly clamped around a long metal rod Peter recognized at once as an animal control pole, the type with a swivel head.
That was important, because no matter how much a wild dog might fight, it could not strangle itself on that nylon noose. A good thing, too, because this animal was putting up quite a fight. Only, it wasn't a dog.
Chapter 21. The boy was no older than Tyler, completely naked and so scrawny the birdcage of his ribs showed. His skin was scored with healing cuts and scrapes, angry sores, and frozen mud, and from the smell, shit caked his feet. He made no sound at all, but then again, the noose was tight, the fat worms of his veins bulging as he thrashed.
"Come on, you little bastard!"
Bucktooth's lips peeled back as he gave the cable a vicious tug. Gagging, the boy's knees hinged.
"Barnes!"
Finn snapped. There was a stinging crack as Finn's open palms connected with Barnes's ears. Barnes didn't even manage a scream and went down in a heap. Finn grabbed up the pole and loosened the noose until the boy sucked in a long, thin, shrieking breath. Cursing, Finn aimed a kick at the felled Barnes, but the old guy was already unconscious.
"Sir," Mather said to Finn, "I think this might not be the best..."
"Shut up!"
In a flash, Finn had his revolver out. The silvered muzzle hung an inch from Mather's nose.
"Not another word, Doctor."
"Yes, sir,"
Mather said.
"That's two," Finn said.
The sound of the shot was enormous. Mather's skull blew out the back in a red mist. She dropped like a tree. Finn turned to Lang, who was white-faced and absolutely still.
"Get someone in here to clean up the mess. And tell Dr. Greer he's just been promoted."
Lang ducked his head once, then scuttled out. Peter lay still as death. He watched Finn turn back to the boy, who was on his knees now. The boy's filthy hands were still clamped around the noose, but he was breathing normally. A froth of red spit foamed his lips.
"There now, Davy," Finn crooned as gently as one might try to calm a feral dog. "That's better, isn't it? Are you hungry, boy? Want something to eat?"
He looked up as Lang returned with two other men.
"Lang, grab hold of Davy here," he said, handing over the control pole. "You two, hold up with Barnes and Mather a minute. They're not going anywhere. Help Lang put Davy in restraints."
He patted the empty gurney beside Peter's.
"Right here, next to his new roomie."
As the guards hurried to comply, Finn turned his attention to the late Mather's instrument tray. Humming, he finger-walked the instruments, then selected a hefty, thick scalpel. The metal winked a hard, bright yellow as Finn stooped over Mather's body. The old woman's eyes were still jammed open, her mouth gaped in a slack, surprised O. Finn reached in, reeled out Mather's tongue, and began to saw.
"He's crazy," Peter's throat convulsed, and then he was rolling his head to one side and vomiting the water he'd just drunk along with a thick gob of sour phlegm and mucus. He gulped air as the room spun.
"He's nuts. He's insane."
"There we go," Finn said.
Peter opened his eyes to find Finn standing over the gurney to his right. The boy was firmly tethered in leather restraints. The boy's chest heaved. His glittery crow's eyes were fixed on Finn's glistening, gore-soaked hands.
"Care for a bite, Davy?"
The boy gasped as the first thick ruby teardrop splashed to his lips. A mad hunger chased over the boy's face as he tongued the blood, then opened wider, craning his neck so the blood could drip directly into his mouth. To Peter, he looked like a baby bird waiting for its mother to cram a worm down its throat. Peter thought of how he must have looked to Finn as the old man offered him water. There was, in fact, no difference. Then, viper-quick, the boy's head darted. Finn jerked back just as Davy's teeth clashed and bit air where Finn's pinky had been.
"Bad boy!"
Finn gave the boy's cheek a quick, hard flick.
"No, Davy, no biting!"
Snarling, the changed boy surged again. Finn backhanded him with a punch this time, right below the boy's eye, and then waited as the guard strapped a wide band of leather across the boy's forehead.
"All right, let's try again."
Finn sliced off another chunk of Mather's tongue with the scalpel. It took three more tries and as many punches before Davy let Finn drop the drippy meat into his mouth without snapping at the old man's fingers. Peter watched as the boy held the morsel in his mouth, then worked the meat from cheek to cheek.
"Go on."
Finn sounded just like a kindly old grandpa slipping his favorite grandson a Hershey's kiss, sure to spoil his appetite on the sly. Without looking around, he added,
"It's quite interesting, actually. I've studied a number of them now. You do realize that the, what do you call it? The change? From my observations, it's not over yet, boyo. Not by a long shot."
Something turned over in his chest. The change wasn't over? The thinking part of his brain had known this was a possibility, but no one in Rule had seen that happen to a spared. No one's safe? Peter felt his mind cringing away. No, he's wrong. I'm spared. It's not going to happen to me or Chris or any of the others spared. It's been too long. It's been months. That can't be right.
Do you know what I wonder?
Finn's face turned a little dreamy.
I wonder what it would be like.
What? Peter managed. He slicked his lips.
You mean to change?
Yes. Self-awareness is a blessing and a curse, Peter. You know when you're coming down with a cold, there are signs and symptoms. So what is the change like? Do you sense it? Would you even know? You must. The dying have this sixth sense when the end is near. Even the insane know when their hold on reality slips. They may lie to themselves, of course, but they know.
I don't... He was shaking. His teeth wouldn't stop chattering. I don't care. I don't want to know. It doesn't matter.
Oh, but it does, and you should care. To understand your enemy, beat him at his own game, you must allow yourself to inhabit his brain, see with his eyes. Now, this is not to say, seen one Chucky, seen them all. Oh, no. For example, take what happens to a Chucky once he's completely turned, like our Davy here.
Finn waved a hand at the boy.
A fresh Chucky is an animal. Some stay wild, others evolve, and some appear to be smarter than others. It's the bell curve in action, boyo. Why, I bet there's a Chucky rocket scientist in the mix somewhere. Oh, I'd so love to catch a normal kid a good long time before he goes native so I can measure the rate at which he reacquires function. I'm especially interested in the ones turning now. Their course must be so different from the first wave, don't you agree? And how do they communicate? We know some work together, travel in bands and packs and gangs and tribes and so forth, while others are loners. So are we talking telepathy,
subaudible vocalizations, scent, body language, alone, in combination?
What are you talking about?
Peter whispered. He was now thoroughly and deeply afraid for the first time since the world went dark.
You want to see if I'm going to change? I'm not. It's been too long. You want to know about Rule? You can torture me, but I won't tell you.
When Finn didn't reply, Peter said,
For God's sake, what do you want?
You mean a smart boy like you can't figure it out? Dropping to one knee, Finn used a thumb to pull down Mather's lower eyelid, then slid the scalpel into the pink tissue tethering Mather's right eyeball to its socket. He worked the blade, scraping bone. You disappoint me, Peter. Despite what the movies say, not all Vietnam vets are crazy. Some of us even get to be senators. Me, I'm a student of the natural world, like Darwin, come to think of it. Evolution, natural selection, survival of the fittest, all unfolding before our eyes. We are the authors of the new origin of species, boyo.
What? Peter was sick with horror. What are you going to do with me?
Isn't it obvious? Finn said. Mather's eye dangled from his fingers by a bloody stalk of nerve. Experiment. Part 3. The Short Straw. Chapter 22. 8 days gone. Alex had kept track, scratching a hash mark into the toe of her right boot with the metal prong of her watch band. Over the past 8 days, she'd figured they'd covered anywhere from 50 to 60 miles. Getting her bearings was a challenge. The days were overcast, the nights starless, and their group kept to the deep woods, but she thought they were moving on a kind of circuit, going first west, but looping north. They stopped at regular intervals, too, during which time the changed hunted, chowed down, caught a little shut-eye. The good news, all things considered, was that she wasn't dead yet. The bad news? She might draw that short straw, and soon. It all came down to the math. 8 days ago, on that first Saturday morning, the changed had 6 Happy Meals to choose from, counting Alex. After all the ruckus, she'd assumed she was next on the menu, yet it seemed that the changed, well, Wolf anyway, had different ideas. Although conscious, Spider was still groggy, so Wolf had wandered up and down, eyeing the herd, that gory corn knife in hand. Twice, he lingered over Alex, now trussed between the old lady, Ruby, and the sickly guy, whose name she would discover was Brian. Wolf's eyes touched on her, then flitted away before jumping back. Playing with her? She wasn't sure. Maybe he was as puzzled as she. Were their experiences similar? Did he feel what she had, that odd sidestep into her consciousness? Could he read her? No, she didn't think so. During the fight on the snow, she'd surprised Spider, and then she remembered how Wolf had been startled when she let that gob of spit fly.
So maybe it doesn't go both ways.
She'd given Wolf a narrow look as he moved down the line, studying each captive.
Maybe I can use that somehow.
In the end, Wolf had chosen a small woman, tiny and brown as a wren, for that Saturday's main course. What puzzled and then appalled her was how the woman didn't struggle or protest. None of the others did either. Instead, they watched impassively as Acne and Beretta took the woman out of the line and led her, stumbling across the snow a short 10 yards to where Wolf waited. When they released her, the woman tottered but didn't fall. She stood, swaying, head down, shoulders slumped. Having replaced his cowl so his face was visible only from the nose down, Wolf waited a long beat, then knotted his fist in the woman's hair.
The little woman let out a small cry as Wolf gave her head a vicious wrench that exposed her throat and made her back arch like a bow. That's when it hit Alex. Wolf was going to kill her right there in front of them. Her stomach tried to crawl into her chest. I can't watch this. Repulsed, still furious, she looked away. I won't give them the satisfaction. The blow was stunning, a ferocious open-palmed smack that sent Alex's head whipping to the right. There was a sharp stab of pain as her teeth clamped her tongue. Her mind hitched and she tottered, her balance already precarious because her ankles were still hobbled together and she nearly went down. She was saved only because the sickly guy, Brian, had enough bulk to steady her. Please. Brian actually tried pulling away as if worried that he might give the appearance of being helpful. Just do what they want. Like hell. Her face felt like a bomb had gone off in her cheek. It was a wonder her jaw wasn't broken. Panting, she pushed away and looked to see which of the change had blindsided her. To her complete lack of surprise, Slash was there, and judging from the loose set of her shoulders, more than happy to let go with another sucker punch. Listen to Brian, please! It was the old lady, Ruby, at her other elbow. Don't fight them. Just do what they want. No! Head ringing, a warm brackish taste filling her mouth, Alex spat blood. How can you just stand there?
Because it's better than getting beat up.
To her left, a surly-looking woman with the hard edge of an ex-biker queen snorted.
If you're smart, you'll just be thankful they gave you a pass and shut the hell up.
Sharon's right. Ruby's eyes were wild. Just go along.
Whatever else Ruby had been about to say ended in an ulp as Slash slid her hand around the old woman's twig of a neck and squeezed.
What are you doing? Alex cried.
Ruby's eyes bugged, her scrawny limbs thrashed in a spastic herky-jerky dance as her mouth flew open, but there was no sound, not even a squawk. Stop!
Sweet Jesus!
It was the barrel-chested man near the end of the line, whom she would later learn was Ruby's husband, Ray. His face was ashen with horror.
For God's sake, just cooperate and she'll let her go!
All right! When Slash only bared her teeth in a ferocious grin, Alex screamed,
all right, you bitch, you win! I'll look, okay? Just let her go!
Still grinning, Slash held onto Ruby's neck for another fraction of a second, then spread her fingers. Gagging, her face the color of a fresh bruise, Ruby tumbled to the snow, nearly pulling Alex down as well. Alex half-turned, moving on instinct to help the retching old woman to her feet before she caught movement and looked up to see Slash closing in again.
I'm not!
Straightening, Alex raised her bound wrists in a hasty surrender.
I'm not helping, okay? See? I'm watching.
Atta girl, the ex-biker queen muttered.
Her name was Sharon, but Alex wouldn't know that until an hour after Wolf gouged the little woman's eyes from their sockets, sucking each from a finger like the soft, chewy center of a naked Tootsie Pop.
You're learning, Sharon said as Wolf closed in. Go along to get along.
Another thing Alex learned that very first day. Spider might like the corn knife, but Wolf liked his teeth. And then they were five. After breakfast, the change crammed the little woman's drippy remains into those nylon duffels. Then they all moved out. Another few hours on the trail put them in at a rustic, though roomy, hunting cabin. Judging from the condition of the snow, Wolf's gang had been back and forth a few times. A quartet of car batteries, connected in a series by wires, nestled on the snowy porch and probably once provided enough juice to run lights. Either the batteries were drained, however, or the change didn't care for or need light. Instead, Acne and Beretta carried in armloads of splits from a tarpaulin-covered woodpile wedged against a dilapidated shed. Soon two columns of gray wood smoke chugged from both a chimney and stove flue. The changed bunked in the cabin, while Alex and the others roomed in the old shed, a drafty place that reeked of ancient engine oil and dead mice. For warmth, they had a squat propane camp heater and one another, although their ropes were removed, leaving them free to roam around the shed under Acne's watchful eye. They'd returned the backpack Jess had given her. Ruby said this was standard.
We always come with something, and whatever we have, we share.
There was something odd about the way Ruby said that, as if it was just assumed that anyone captured would have supplies. That actually didn't make sense. People could be snatched at random, but Ruby had said always. But Alex's arm was screaming by then, and she didn't have the energy to ask any more questions. She caught some luck. Inside the pack, Jess had squirreled a battered first aid kit that looked as if it hadn't seen daylight since the early Mesozoic era. The alcohol swabs were long dry, the gauze packs were still intact, however, and several foils of antiseptic goo were squishy enough that she thought they'd do the trick. No antibiotics to swallow, but maybe she wouldn't need them. While the others squabbled over energy bars and MREs, she melted snow in an empty can and let the water boil, then cool to where she wouldn't scald herself. The pain was ferocious, like something with talons and teeth gnawing her flesh to the bone. It was so bad her stomach somersaulted and then rolled on a tidal heave of nausea. She stopped what she was doing to hang her head between her knees. God! Her face and neck were filmed in a fine, greasy sweat. She gulped air, working not to pant. How had Tom not passed out? She was having a hard time with only hot water and gauze. Tom had withstood a superheated knife. Oh, Tom. Her throat knotted. A wave of shame and grief swept through her. She managed to stop her the moan, but she felt the tears leaking down her cheeks. She thought of how hard she'd struggled to hang on to him, his face, his scent, the way he looked at her, how he made her feel. But I gave up. I should have fought harder, found a way out, but it was easier just to go along. She wasn't an idiot. She knew she was being illogical. Someone, something, had gotten to him. Tom was dead, and that was not her fault. She'd done the best she could, so why did she feel this crush of guilt, like she was the one to blame? Tom wouldn't want that. The one sensible thing Jess had ever said was that Tom's sacrifice, all he'd done and suffered through to keep her and Ellie alive, shouldn't be for nothing. Tom would want her to go on with her life, not beat up on herself.
Tom, I'm trying, but what am I fighting for? Staying alive just to stay alive isn't enough.
She felt a sudden irrational urge to laugh. God, she was worrying about the meaning of life when she was probably going to wind up minced into sushi. Hey! She looked up to find Sharon, the ex-biker queen, eyeing her. The woman clutched an MRE meal pack in one hand and was busy forking in cheesy noodles.
You all right? Sharon asked through a gluey mouthful of half-chewed pasta.
Sharon didn't sound all that concerned, really. Probably hoping I keel over, and then it's just that much more food for her. That snot-yellow goo on Sharon's chin wasn't doing wonders for Alex's stomach, either. The others were similarly stuffing their faces, and the listless, vacant looks they turned on her were incurious at best.
Yeah.
Smearing away the wet with the backs of her hands, she pulled in a tremulous breath. She'd be damned if she cried in front of these people. No one had offered to help her. No, all they were interested in was filling their bellies.
The shoulders just hurts, that's all.
Huh. Well, you know the old saying. Sharon chewed, swallowed, used the heel of one hand to swab her chin.
Which one?
Sharon seemed to be a font of meaningless homilies, and Alex really wasn't interested.
God, how can they eat after what they've seen?
Maybe I'll end up the same way, if I live long enough, that is. It's like being afraid. How long can horror really last before you just numb out?
No pain, no gain. It's always darkest before the dawn.
No, Sharon sucked her hand clean. No matter how bad you think things are now, she forked up another mouthful of wormy noodles, they can always get worse.
They stayed put overnight that first Saturday, a delay she later learned was unusual. By twilight, the change normally moved on. Privately, Alex suspected that beating the crap out of Spider had something to do with the layover. On Sunday, at dusk, they all set out again. The dense cloud cover choking the sky that afternoon hadn't broken, and the night was black as pitch. With no stars, she could only guess at a bearing, but thought they were still heading north or northwest. Another thing, the changed often used flashlights and lanterns, but only intermittently. While Alex and the others struggled and stumbled, the changed were shadows, moving with relative ease through the forest. Like panthers, she thought, or wolves. She knew from high school bio that the eyes of nocturnal animals were different, though she couldn't recall exactly how. This ability begged another question, too. Were the changed done changing? All told, going by Ellie's Mickey Mouse watch, they walked until 3 Monday morning and managed maybe 6 miles before putting in at another campsite. No shelter this time around. Acne and Slash lashed them to each other, and then a trio of stout oaks before heading out to hunt. Again clad in his wolfskin, Wolf led the pack. Only Spider stayed behind, huddled over a fire while they burrowed into the snow and waited. When the changed returned at first light, they brought fresh faces, a doughy woman and a bluff man shaped like a fireplug, who said later that his name was Otis. The woman was Claire, but it was Otis who told them her name. Not 5 minutes after the changed returned, Wolf went to work with his teeth, and then Claire was way past caring about little niceties like an introduction. On Wednesday, day 5, she thought she was done. By then, Spider had recovered enough to do the honors. Prowling through their number, she favored Alex with a good long stare. Spider's hatred was so palpable you didn't need Spidey sense to see it. Where the others withered at the slightest eye contact, however, Alex wouldn't let herself waver. In fact, she rather enjoyed the view. Spider's face was a mess. No perky little nose now, and all that good orthodontia gone to hell. Spider's bruises were turning a sickly greenish-black. Her left cheek was so badly swollen that her eye was only a silver slit. "When they cut me loose, go for it," Alex tensed, rehearsing the moves in her mind. "Run at her, get in under the knife, and..." In the next instant, that nip of resin stung her nose, and she thought, uh-oh. Her eyes inched left, and then her pulse skipped. Wolf's face was a studied blank, though she saw the small muscles of his jaw twitch and that scar dance. The space around and above her head seemed to fizzle and spark. The air took on a scorched stink, like the lingering of ozone after an electrical storm. Spider's back stiffened as the other changed heads swiveled from her to Wolf and then back again. Fighting about which one was going to have her, she thought. One way or the other, I'm done. The tang of desperation left her mouth puckery and parched. Having seen what Wolf could do, what he enjoyed, she didn't see how she could get out of this. It was one thing to headbutt Spider and grab a knife, but those clashing jaws. He's heavier and I can't outrun them. They'll pin me down and then Wolf will... All of a sudden, Spider faltered. A deep tremor rippled through the girl's body, and her ruined lips twisted as that chemical nip, fear and rage combined, filled the air. Recoiling, the girl backpedaled several quick steps, then spun in a snap of wolf fur, marching down the line to stop in front of poor Otis. My God, if she hadn't just seen this, she wouldn't have believed it. Wolf let me live. Wolf fought Spider, got her to back off. This, she figured, might not work out so well in the end, and for all sorts of reasons. Spider already hated her guts, and right back at you, girlfriend. But Alex didn't understand. Why was Wolf keeping her alive? Just so he could be the one to end her life? Terrific. This might not be any more complicated than what you did with an ice cream sundae. She didn't know a single kid who didn't save that cherry for last. So how much longer did she really have? Day 6, Thursday. A little before 4 that morning, Brian, the one Alex had pegged as the diabetic, collapsed. After all those miles struggling through deep snow, his feet were black with a creeping gangrene that macerated his flesh up to his knees and poisoned his blood. He was so out of it, Alex thought he didn't really catch on until maybe the 3rd or 4th cut. Then Brian began to scream. 10 seconds, maybe 20. Clearly tired of the fuss, Spider drew a vicious backhanded slice. All of a sudden, Brian's shrieks cut out as a drippy red smile stretched across his neck. And then Brian's head unhinged, just opened up and flopped so far back that his startled eyes locked on Alex upside down, chin on top, eyes on bottom, the back of his head resting between his shoulders as his blood spurted in twin red ropes. At the sight, her mind slewed and she thought crazily, just like that android in Alien. Now they were 4. Saturday, early morning, day 8. Otis was a scatter of bones. Alex couldn't even remember what the man had looked like. The change had reduced poor sick Brian to a quivering mound of hacked mush, yet hadn't so much as tasted a mouthful, probably for the same reason that no one in his right mind ate rotted green bologna. So, with only 4 of them left, if the change didn't add to the herd, she had a week and a half to live, tops. She also knew that Wolf was getting hungrier. A good burger wasn't going to do the trick either. Call it intuition or her spidey sense, but she just knew. Wolf's hunger radiated like heat shimmers from baked asphalt. Sometimes he touched her, nothing flat out obscene, but his hand might brush and then linger on her arm, his shadowy scent strengthening, growing headier by the second. Once he'd reached past her shoulder, for what she didn't remember, and then their faces were only inches apart. Again. Close enough that she saw his scar throb like something living as his heart quickened. His nostrils flared as his lips parted and he drew her in like a snake, and the pulse of his hunger intensified and changed into something very nearly physical, as palpable and real as an embrace. And God help her, the longer she remained with these changed, and especially around Wolf, the more this very strange, shimmery, swimmy feeling veiled her mind. Despite all the horrors, when Wolf touched her or came near, her heart skipped with equal parts attraction and deepening dread. She was doubling somehow, her boundaries dissolving as a shadowy second self slipped from her body to straddle a divide. Not quite empathy, but very close. The idea sent a shudder of revulsion through her skin and raised goose flesh. In sophomore sociology, she had read about prisoners and kidnap victims and what happened when a hostage began to sympathize with and see the world through a kidnapper's eyes. There were famous examples, too. Patty Hearst, the victims from the Swedish bank robbery where the Stockholm Syndrome got its name. But I'm not like them. That is so not happening. Not ever. Yet she felt the tug. She let herself reach past that reek of decay to a familiar aroma of cool mist and swarming shadows that she savored and rolled through her mouth and allowed to linger on her tongue. So close. She shut her eyes. Her pulse throbbed. So close. If she truly let herself go, she could almost believe that this boy was Chris, because they were two sides of the same coin, one light and the other a dark doppelganger. Neither was evil. Both were true to who they were.
But Wolf is the enemy. He will always be the enemy. Remember that. He'll kill you eventually. He'll have no choice. It's what he is.
Chapter 23. Saturday had come so quickly, and now this very last day with him was nearly done. Grace aimed a glance out the picture window. The sun was a suggestion, more than a fact, a dimming smudge hidden behind a thick drapery of pewter clouds that rapidly shaded to gunmetal gray as her eye moved north. The tamaracks lining Odd's west bank were a thicket of dark bristles and vertical slashes, like a stockade against the fresh-fallen snow. The storm had swept through this region of Wisconsin a day ago and was now well on its way east to Michigan, but there was no telling if the storm might reverse course. Storms stalled around Lake Superior all the time. She hoped that might delay him, but he was bound and determined to leave.
"So, this is it. A sort of last meal," she thought, and then got a little impatient with herself. "Don't mope. Don't make this harder for him than it has to be."
Well, he would leave with a full belly if she had anything to say about it. Nearly everything was ready. Potatoes, a venison stew, a trio of baked apples, and a nice pan of cornbread. All that needed doing was the cake, and that was the real challenge. Grace eyed the heavy cast-iron Dutch oven nestled in glowing coals. Burn rates varied. The shapes of the coals were important. Heat was mechanical energy converted into thermal energy, but temperature was determined by kinetic energy. So complicated. So much preparation, but the simple pleasure of imagining the look on his face made it worthwhile. The table was strewn with tinsel from some long-ago Christmas. She'd unearthed ancient wrapping paper for the scarf and four pairs of wool socks knitted on the sly. Out of what remained, she fashioned a twinkly silver banner with his name, his real name, in big cut-out letters. Of course, she had always known. Her head might be stuffed with numbers, but she wasn't in orbit. She only pretended sometimes. Grace had never been a stupid woman. Take the afternoon 5 years ago when the Marines knocked at her door. The odds they'd dropped by for coffee and crumb cake weren't high. A very nice corporal caught her on the way down. She apologized, but the corporal said that when the heart sinks, everybody falls. Flipping the timer, she drew another hash mark on a scrap of old envelope. She stared at the tiny grains slithering in an avalanche down that miniature mountain. A single grain was a millimeter, factor in volume, and there were 3,000 grains per 3-minute timer, 1,000 grains a minute, 16.66666 into infinity grains per second.
"God, I'm not asking for much. Just let the cake come out all right, okay? Just this one last thing."
Another flip, another hash mark. 6 down, 7 to go. Jed had strict instructions not to come back up from the boathouse for another 45 minutes, so plenty of time. The cake needed another 19, Grace figured. 21 minutes, tops. Too bad she only had 10. Chapter 24.
"I wish you'd take the horse," Jed said. "And I'm going to say the same thing I said the other 80 times you asked."
Tom rolled a flannel shirt into a tight tube and slid it into his backpack, then hefted the pack in both hands. All told, he'd be carrying about 30 pounds on his back, which he could handle just fine. He'd taken long treks on snowshoes, sprinting up hills, timing his pace with Jed's old Timex. The legs still grabbed and locked, but he could go a good half day without much of a break.
"You need both horses, and you know it. Besides, you're giving me plenty as it is."
Jed's face puckered like he was sucking a lemon drop.
"Even if I were to tell you it was a birthday present?" "My birthday was in December."
"Late birthday present, then?"
"No."
Pause.
Grace would like it.
Jed?
All right, all right.
Sighing, Jed hooked his thumbs in his parka's pockets. You are a very stubborn boy, Tom Eaton.
So I've been told.
After a moment's silence, he said, How surprised should I act? I mean, considering you've told me about the cake.
Oh, that cake, Jed slapped his thigh. My God, I must have aged 10 years listening to her go on about chemistry and all these equations and molecular coefficients. The only physics I ever needed was bullet trajectories and wind speed.
I think you had fun.
Oh, yeah. Grace always was smart as a whip. Michael took after her more than me. He was gonna... The old man took a hard swallow. He was fixing on engineering school, but the money was a problem, so he joined up. Then he figured out how much he liked the Marines, and that was that. I thought maybe when Alice came along he might stop to think about what would happen to her and Deb if he got himself killed, but he was stubborn, just like you. Once his heart was set on a path, there was no talking to him.
Jed looked so miserable that Tom had to fight the impulse to blurt out that, fine, he would stay. There was no way around this. His leaving would hurt, and there was nothing he could do about that. The Coleman hissed. He let Jed break the silence.
I got something else for you.
You shouldn't, Tom said quietly. You've given me so much already.
And not nearly half what you're worth, Jed said fiercely. The deep crevices along the sides of his nose were wet.
Tom said nothing. Jed unzipped the Road King's right saddlebag, reached in, and fished out a bulging plastic accordion document pouch tied with a string.
You got maps, and I put down how to get where me and Grace are going come spring. There's a list, too, he added as Tom unwound the string. Folks who might come in handy. I know I told you not to trust anyone, but if they're still around, these are good people.
Tom fingered the envelope, then drew out a brittle piece of paper so old that the edges were frayed, though the ink was new.
Who are they?
Vets, most of them. We rode Rolling Thunder together. And here. Jed dug inside his shirt and slipped something from around his neck. You take these. Show them to anyone on that list, and they'll know you're okay.
The tags, warm from Jed's body heat, were not a matched set.
The edge of the older tag was crimped, and there was no social, just Jed's name, service number, blood type, and religion. The design of the other he was very familiar with, because his meat tag tattoo had the same information. His own tags, with their rubber silencers, were tucked in an old sock drawer back in a house that, more than likely, was now nothing but ashes.
I shouldn't take these.
Tom, you're young. You think you can go it alone, but you ought to know by now that you can't. You're going to need help. Now you take those. Jed paused.
Humor an old fool. Do it for me, if nothing else.
Jed had a point. If Vietnam veterans were anything like vets nowadays, the network was tight and the bonds were for life. Draping the tags around his neck, he tucked them inside his shirt.
Where's your other tag?
With Michael. That tag of his there is the one they brought to the house. Night before the funeral, though, I slipped one of mine in there with him so he wouldn't be alone. Jed put his hand on Tom's shoulder. Now you won't be either. There was a knock at the front door. Three, actually, sharp and evenly spaced.
Darn it!
Grace's brows pulled down in a frown. Jed was early, but he always used the south door. Anyway, he wouldn't knock.
More raps. Grace, it's me!
Her shoulders relaxed, but only a little. She knew the voice, but it was the wrong place at the wrong time. She would have to figure out a way to get rid of him. He couldn't see the table, the gifts.
Grace! Well, shoot!
She threw a quick glance at the timer, now halfway through this ninth cycle. It shouldn't take more than 20 seconds to answer the door. Plenty of time.
1-1000, 2-1000. I'll just say he can't stay.
She headed out of the west room and took the short hall to the front door. 3-1000-4. I'll be firm, and then I'll shut the door, and I won't answer again, no matter what. 6-1000. She dragged open the front door, wincing against a wintry blast. 7. Everything she needed to say piled up like those grains of sand on that miniature mountain. Her mouth opened, but not a word tumbled out. She recognized the old man in his black parka and two large bombardier hat, pulled so far down he had to tip his head back to see where he was going. The other two, hard and grim-faced and also old, because just about everyone was these days, she didn't recognize at all. 3 men. For one brief moment, she felt a weird sense of déjà vu. She wasn't at the cabin, and the world hadn't gone to hell, and the Marines had only just arrived as she wandered out of the kitchen with measuring spoons, because for the life of her she couldn't remember what those spoons were for. Then her eyes shifted to the horses. 3 men, 2 rifles. But 6 horses.
These men, that's 3.
She felt the air drying her tongue, her voice evaporating the way the fizz in pop died.
A horse for him, too, but not me or Jed, because they're not here for us, and that makes 4. So where are the other 2 men?
She looked at the old man in that ridiculously outsized hat.
Abel?
Chapter 25. Saturday night.
I don't like it. They've been gone way too long, practically since dawn, and they don't hunt during the day. Plus, they got a bonfire going in the snow. What sense does that make?
Sharon dug a grimy fingernail into a huge weeping sore, pocking her right cheek. The ulceration, mushy and liverish, occupied the bullseye of a faded green-gray tattoo of a web like a squashed spider. Sharon tossed a glare at Acne, perched on a low coffee table to the left of a crackling fire Alex had gotten started, and then turned an equally suspicious eye on Alex.
How come they ain't come back to camp?
How should I know?
Alex asked, although this place could hardly be called a camp. From the metallic scent of hard ice and what she'd been able to make out in the failing light, the Changed had claimed someone's old lake place, a swank and very large Victorian with gingerbread, a porch swing, and even a flagpole. Acne and Slash, the pack's muscle, had herded them into a small guest house that held the long stale whiff of sulfur and rancid fat from an ancient breakfast of fried eggs. Compared to the run-down sheds and frigid lean-tos of the past week, this place was a mansion.
I don't know any more than you do.
Sharon coughed a laugh. Alex had known used gym socks with better breath.
That's horse shit, Sharon said. I got eyes. So does that boyfriend of yours.
Christ, Ray said.
Once a fleshy man, his gut now sagged like an empty paper bag. Putting an arm around his wife's shoulders, he hugged Ruby closer.
Aren't things bad enough? I'm just saying what we're all thinking, Sharon snapped.
From his perch, Acne turned to look at them, and Sharon brayed,
Hey, you son of a bitch, when are you gonna feed us?
Sharon,
Ruby's voice quivered like the string of a bow drawn to the breaking point. Don't provoke them. Sharon glowered.
Well, I wouldn't, except we're hungry. We need food, unless you want us all skin and bones, you assholes.
Given that Sharon had more ink per square inch than anyone Alex had ever known, and that the Changed had a distinctive taste for, unusual accessories like tattooed skin kerchiefs and bandanas, Alex had a sneaking suspicion the Changed would be just as happy if Sharon was nothing but skin. Easier to peel. A mean thought, but then again, Sharon wasn't her favorite person.
You know why they haven't fed us, Sharon, Ruby said. Because they haven't found anyone else. It's just bad luck.
Luck? Got nothing to do with it. We're all going to end up stew meat, except maybe little Miss Alex here.
Sharon squinted.
Don't think I don't see the way you and that wolf boy keep making googly eyes at each other. That's one itch he's got that I'm thinking only you can scratch.
Sharon, Ray said without much heat, put a cork in it.
It's all right, Ray,
Alex said. Yeah, Ray, Sharon said. Me and Alex are just talking while we all sit on our butts waiting to die.
But must you be so hateful?
Ruby forked hair from her face with a hand that was all brittle bone tented with frail skin.
We're all in the same boat.
Wanna bet? I think one of us has got herself a pretty nice little life raft. So where you think your boyfriend's got himself to, Alex?
Sharon grinned, not a pleasant sight. Her mouth was a gap-toothed tangle of discolored off-kilter pegs.
Think maybe he ran out, got himself a new girlfriend? Or maybe him and that blonde are...
Alex zoned out. This was a tune.